Blog Talk Radio.
Of a bitch. What's up, everybody? Oh, I'm happy to be back on air. I was sick last night, and man, it was horrible. I've spoken about this before, probably on the Kyle and Corin podcast, but when I get sick, I morph into like a fetus. Or probably more like a toddler is the best way to describe it. I'm a baby. I'm a kid. I'm like, I'm feeling good. I need love and attention. This feels horrible. Like, I had to focus all my energy in not wanting to die last night. You ever have that feeling like you're on the verge of vomiting, but then you don't vomit? That was me for like 2 hours. I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, I'm going to vomit any minute now. Oh, it's going to happen any second now. Okay, it didn't happen yet. Oh, I wish it kind of would happen just so I could be over with this. And no, it wasn't because I was drunk. It wasn't because I was fucked up. I was just sick. I don't know what it was. Maybe I ate some bad food. I was outside for a little bit, and it was like a super windy around here. I don't know. It was like a cold wind. I don't know. I don't know what it was. But isn't sleep amazing? Like, when I woke up, it's like my body fucking recalibrated itself. I was honestly thinking about, like, a computer. Like, you know how sometimes, oh, I have a computer issue, yada, yada, just restart it, and it's like, oh, it's fixed somehow. Well, that was magical. That's like your body when you sleep. It was amazing. I'm entertaining probably zero of you with my story right now, but I had to get it off my chest. I was thinking, I was up late, I'm feeling sick. I'm like, I don't know if I can do a show tomorrow. I had the show all scheduled and stuff and prepped and everything was ready. Like, I don't know if I could do it. But I woke up today and I was like, yeah, I can fucking do it. I feel great. So here we are. And the news piled up like a motherfucker over the weekend. So we got a lot to talk about. We have more fantasies from anti-Trump Republicans. I can't wait to tell you what they did now and who they tried to recruit. Then we have Donald Trump with all his nonsense and, oh, what do you mean? I'm not taking any big money. I'm like Bernie Sanders, bro. This is like the argument he's been making from the beginning. Well, we knew it wasn't true early on because I explained to you guys and I showed you guys how there was this report, I think it was in Politico, that proved that Trump actually went to all the same Republican billionaires to try to get bribed, but they said no originally. It was only after that he started saying, oh my God, yeah, no, totally, big money, fuck that, I'm totally against that. Well, now we have just more than a total reversal from Trump on this. So the idea that he's not taking big money at this point is preposterous. So I'll lay that out for you. And wait until we get into the hoopla that happened at the Nevada Democratic Convention. By the way, don't even ask. Like, actually, I pronounced it wrong. Everybody yells at me when I say it wrong, and they're from there. The Nevada. I say Nevada. It's Nevada. The way that they do their election, it just makes no sense. Not that the other states make sense. I mean, for fuck's sake, I'm from New York. You know what it was like with that Democratic primary, where they fucking locked out millions of people from voting. But the way that they do this in Nevada is like you want to bang your head against the wall. I'm surprised they didn't add into the rules for the election. You also have to do a round-robin hacky-sack tournament every third Sunday until until the Kentucky Derby next year. Like, the rules are ridiculous. But anyway, so I got all that and much more. I'm excited. We've been off the air since we didn't have a show Friday, so I've been itching. I'm itching, but I'm back. All right, let's do it. Here we go again with the fantasies of anti-Trump Republicans. The Washington Post reported over the weekend, quote, anti-Trump Republicans courted Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban to run for president in a third-party bid. Cuban, who rejected the advances, nonetheless expressed confidence in his ability to take on the presumptive GOP presidential nominee in an election. Quote, he could come after me all he wanted, and he knows I would put him in his place. All that said, again, I don't see it happening. There isn't enough time. They continue here. ABC's Shark Tank host declined to name the Republicans who approached him with the offer, but he said they told him that his bluster and volume combined with substance and the ability to connect with voters on a more personal basis would make him a viable candidate. Okay. This story is adorable. Think about what they're doing here. It hit me as I was going through the article yesterday. I was like, oh, I see what they're doing. They're trying to defeat Trump by finding a better Trump that they feel is more controllable and less of a lunatic. So I have zero doubt that the Republican establishment and the elites and the top operatives in the party sat down around a conference table. And they're like, okay, how do we defeat Trump? How do we defeat Trump? Any ideas, anybody? 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 And somebody said, why don't we make a list of the things that Trump is and try to find somebody who's just like that, who we can control more, who could beat him in an election? And they were like, that's it. So what is Mark Cuban? Mark Cuban is a loud, obnoxious, I would say he's kind of a buffoon, even though somebody disagrees with me, billionaire. That's exactly what Trump is. A loud, obnoxious, kind of a buffoon, billionaire. So this shows how disconnected they are, man. They don't get it. They don't get it. It's not that people like Trump because he's a buffoon and a billionaire. They like him. I mean, we've gone over the million reasons why he ended up beating all those other idiots in the GOP primary parade. But they like him primarily because he portrays himself as anti-establishment, and he portrays himself as, you know, above the fray and with the common man and with the working class voter. Now, whether or not that's true is a totally separate conversation, and you guys know where I stand on that. I think he's a liar and a fraud and a con man, and I don't think he's going to represent you in any way. But that's more or less his appeal. It stems from a few things. Yes, the aggressive part helps. Yes, the over-the-top confidence helps. But probably the biggest thing is that he portrays himself as, I'm with the little guy, and he says stuff like, I'm not going to cut Social Security, I'm not going to cut Medicare, hey, maybe we should do less war, hey, perhaps we should do tariffs so that we can force corporations to stay in the U.S. instead of doing stupid free trade deals and sending them overseas. By the way, again, he personally benefits from those trade deals, so he's a liar when he says he wants to keep the jobs here. But it's these things, when he says them, people like it. They go, oh, he's on my team. You think Mark Cuban would do that kind of rhetoric? Fuck no. Mark Cuban, not in a million years would he get out there and say those kinds of things that are kind of genuinely populist. But in the minds of these idiot Republican establishment freaks, they're like, well, that stuff doesn't matter. Like, that didn't enter into their calculation. Like, oh, maybe it's the anti-establishment angle, and maybe it's the populist angle. Nobody brought that up. Instead, they were like,
I guess they like him because he's a billionaire. I guess maybe that's why they like him. So Mark Cuban's a billionaire too. Maybe he can win in an election.
If they're just going for billionaires, why don't you fucking run Mr. Sheldon Adelson himself, who's 1,003 years old? Because it's got nothing to do with the fact that he's allegedly a billionaire. They like him for other reasons, reasons which go right over your fucking heads. So, I mean, there is no end to how disconnected the Republican establishment is. Like, everything they try to analyze and break down, they're just wrong. And honestly, nobody should be surprised by this, because we know that top people in the Republican establishment all along were laughing and mocking Trump and saying there's no way he's going to get far at all, even after he had proven himself to be serious. So, after he took New Hampshire, you know, people were saying, hey, after the first debate, he's going to be gone. And then he won the first debate. And like, okay, after maybe the second debate. And then he won that. And then they just kept moving the goalposts. After the third debate, fourth debate, after Iowa, after New Hampshire, after Nevada, And then he started winning all these different states. And idiots still were out there saying, peak Trump. This is peak Trump. He can't go any further than this. I mean, let's be serious. Remember Bill Kristol, the neocon douchebag? He's like, oh, no, peak Trump, definitely. He made like 8 peak Trump predictions. And this was back when it was like halfway through the race. We covered a story on it. I was laughing my ass off. All the other guys, Karl Rove, all of them feel the same way. And now what's their solution? What's their answer? Well, find somebody who has all the negative characteristics that Trump has, none of the positive characteristics, and somehow they'll beat him? No, it's a fucking fantasy. The many Republican politicians over the past few decades, they made their fucking bed. Now they got to sleep in it. And as we've described before, on some issues, Trump is just a quintessential Republican. On the racism and the xenophobia and the bigotry, he just says it in plain language when others are speaking in coded language. So he's the quintessential Republican on that issue. You made your bed, you got to sleep in it. And then on some other issues, he's actually better than you guys. He realized, oh, Republican-based voters don't care about these, you know, traditional free market values, laissez-faire, unfettered capitalism. They don't know anything about that. They're just like, is he looking out for me? Is he not looking out for me? And when Trump says, hey, you know, I'm actually going to fight for unions and I'm going to make sure that he keeps the jobs in the U.S., they go, all right, he's looking out for me. So, again, in some ways he's a quintessential Republican. In other ways he's better than them. And they're clueless. It's amazing. They must have the least accurate analysts in human history in the room with them when they're trying to figure out how to take down Trump. I honestly want to know what's next. Like, who are you going to go to next? Because first they thought, Mitt Romney, he's super popular. He'll take down Trump. And then they did polls, and Mitt Romney got like negative 46%. And they're like, oh, that was a bad idea? Okay, I'm going to find somebody else. Oh, there we go. Mark Cuban. He definitely beat him. No, he wouldn't. I'm seriously curious who they're going to pick next. Ken Ham? Maybe try that. Pee Wee Herman? Who the fuck knows? Okay. Goofballs. All right. Speaking of Sheldon Adelson, as I briefly mentioned, now let's talk more in detail about him. I got a great story here. Republican mega donor and billionaire Sheldon Adelson has decided to back Donald Trump. Now, earlier on, he didn't want to do it. I think he was leaning towards Marco Rubio. He had previously bought Marco Rubio in prior elections for, obviously, the Senate. And that's his guy. He's his little puppet bitch. But Marco Rubio obviously couldn't get 8 people to like him in the country. So now that it's Donald Trump, and it's Donald Trump for sure, he decided, yeah, I'm going to back him. So The Hill reports here, Adelson is willing to donate more than $100 million to Donald Trump's campaign. He officially endorsed Trump in an op-ed Friday, saying he exemplifies the American spirit of determination, commitment to cause, and business stewardship. Okay, that's hilarious for so many reasons. He exemplifies the American spirit of determination. How exactly? Because he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and his daddy was worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, Trump has this line where he says, I only took a $1 million loan from my father. Yeah, a small loan of $1 million. First of all, LOL, $1 million is not a small loan. Can you imagine some kid in Harlem? Like, they small loan. My parents just gave me $1 million. Preposterous. But on top of that, it's not true. He actually got way more than that. You know, his dad passed away at some point. That money went somewhere. It was split between the kids. So Trump got way more than $1 million. So it's just a lie. So I don't know what you mean, determination. And then, oh, he's good at business. Yeah, but everybody leaves out the minimum 4 bankruptcies. There's actually been more than that now. The 4 bankruptcies is based off an old article, and I know there's been one since. So it's at least 5 bankruptcies. Now, again, Trump wiggles his way out of this one by saying, I never went bankrupt. I never went bankrupt. I never went bankrupt. Okay, I never went bankrupt. And he repeats it to the point where people are like, I don't know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, I don't know. But people think he's a good businessman, so who cares? It's a wash, I guess he's a good businessman. No. He wiggles out of it by saying, I never went bankrupt. His companies went bankrupt. Yes, he personally never went bankrupt, but what he did is he would load his companies up with debt, run out the back door with all the money, and screw over all the workers. So his companies went bankrupt at least 5 times. Hey, guess what? One of my companies never went bankrupt. By the way, I say companies like I have multiple companies. I don't. But I guess by at least one way of measuring it, I'm a better businessman than Donald Trump. His companies went bankrupt 5 times. And no, that's not a, like a get-out-of-jail-free card. Like, oh, well, you can't criticize it because it's his companies and not him. Of course I can, especially the way he did it, because he did it specifically to fuck over the workers and get rich himself and run out the back door with all the money. So Sheldon Adelson is just wrong. But then again, what would you expect from such a sleazy businessman himself? For those of you who don't know, Sheldon Adelson made his money through casinos. And there was this huge story a few years ago about how there were, you know, these bills popping up in Congress to shut down online gambling. Like, I'm sure you guys remember the heyday, or I certainly do. Perhaps it's just the circle I run in. But, like, online Texas Hold'em, online gambling. Like, oh, you could go play and play for real money and all these different sites. And it was this huge thing. I knew people who made a living doing it. Congress was like, yeah, fuck that. Shut it down. Guess who was behind the lobbying effort to shut down online gambling? Sheldon Adelson. So this jackass who made all of his money through casinos hired lobbyists to make the moral values argument. Well, obviously they paid politicians too to do their bidding. But then they'd go to the public and say, oh, what do you mean moral values? We got to make sure our kids don't get addicted to gambling. What, are you crazy? We have to make sure of that. So the same people that were making the moral values argument were making all their money from casinos. So it was just to keep a monopoly. So he's not a businessman as much as he's a fucking con artist, and he's corrupt through and through. That's Sheldon Adelson. But the most important point here is everything Donald Trump's been saying from the beginning, I don't take big money, I'm self-funded my campaign. That is not true. It's not true. In fact, we covered a story. I don't know of anybody else who covered it. I don't know of anybody else who fucking saw it. But we covered a story right in the middle of the election or early on in the election when Trump was using that talking point over and over and over and over and over. Politico had a piece. I think it was Politico. It might have been the Washington Post, but I think it was Politico. They had a piece about how Donald Trump went to all the same billionaire Republican donors that all the other Republicans go to, and he went hat in hand begging for money. He said, look, I want to run for president. I'm going to need some funding. Help a brother out. They all said no to him. It was only after he was snubbed by these billionaire mega donors that he hit the campaign trail and said, I'm against this big money in politics. Oh, so much corruption going on everywhere. They're puppets. I'm not a puppet. I'm not bought. I'm self-funding my campaign. Well, the only reason you're not bought is because they didn't want to buy you. But you're fucking for sale. That's for sure. And then on top of that, he's had this scam going where he says, I'm self-financing my campaign. You go to his fucking website, there's a donate button there. And then, yes, they take money and they use that money for running. Now, you can argue, well, that's different because it's, you know, you're taking donations at the smaller level. So that's fundamentally different than big donors. I agree with that. But he doesn't say that. He says, I'm self-financing, and then he takes donations. That's not self-financing. So in like 40 different ways, he's lying about it, and he's not telling the truth. And now you know, without a shadow of a doubt, Papa Adelson's like, yeah, I'm going to give you money. And Trump reversed the second he got the GOP nomination. He reversed. And he said it. He's like, well, now we are going to be raising money for the general election. So like, oh, he pretends I'm so principled. He pretends to be like Bernie in the primaries, and then right when he gets to the general. Did I say that? I didn't mean any of that. Now I'm flipping and I'm saying I am going to raise money because what are you going to do? You got to play the game. You got to defeat Crooked Hillary, am I right? The irony of calling her Crooked Hillary as he's going to do the same shit now. So it's just an utter joke. Bottom line is, guys, don't believe the hype. When Trump makes those arguments, he makes those arguments because he knows they're effective. But he's not actually abiding by that shit. You think he's actually principled like Bernie Sanders? How unbelievably naive must you be to fall for the repeated con man as he cons you again. Okay. Oh, one more thing I forgot to mention on this story. This is really important. And then finally, and the most important thing about Sheldon Adelson now saying, I'm going to give him over $100 million. Remember, during the election cycle, Donald Trump appeared to be the only sane person on stage on the issue of Israel. This is in the primary, where he said, I'm going to be neutral. And then when he was pressed on that, he said, understand, guys, you could be as pro-Israel as you want. I'm more pro-Israel than anybody in the world ever. But you at least have to appear to be neutral so you can try to get a deal and you can work with the other side. That was a scandal. People portrayed him, oh, anti-Israel, terrible guy, blah, 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 blah. So that was his position in the primary. Now that Papa Adelson shows up and his number one issue is Israel. I think he literally calls himself an Israel firster. He cares more about that than anything in U.S. politics. All of a sudden, Trump, the other day article comes out. He says Israel should expand settlements. He goes, in the U.S., we haven't been treating Israel very kind. We haven't been treating them very fairly. And I don't think they should stop. I think they should expand it. You thought this guy was principled? Oh, he is, ironically, at the end of the day, he may end up being the ultimate political insider when he's portrayed himself all along as an outsider and above the fray and not interested in playing the corrupt games. My ass cheeks, he's not interested. Do I have time for one more before the first break here? I don't have time for that one. I don't have time for that one. I gotta see if I have one that's quick enough. I don't have time for that one. I don't have time for that one. God damn it, man. All the stories I have prepped for today, I have a lot to say on. Actually, you know what? Let me jump way ahead. I do have time for this new study on abortion before we take our first break. The journal Lancet published a new study on the issue of worldwide abortion done by the Guttmacher Institute, and the results are absolutely fascinating. So the Associated Press reports here, the rate of abortions in the developed world has dropped to an all-time low while remaining steady in poorer regions where nearly 90% of the abortions worldwide occur. The rate in rich countries fell to an all-time low between 1990 and 2014, from about 46 abortions per 1,000 women in 1990 to 27 abortions per 1,000 women in 2014. But in the developing world, the rate remained virtually unchanged at about 37 abortions per 1,000 women. There was no difference in the incidence of abortion in countries where the procedure is legal versus where it is heavily restricted or outlawed. That is a stunning fact. So what they're saying is, even if you outlaw abortion, you're going to have the same number of abortions in that country as you would in a country where it's legal. So then what's the only difference? The only difference would be where it's outlawed, they are incredibly risky abortions, and oftentimes the mother can die. We're talking about black market abortions. We're talking about, you know, perhaps dirty tools used to get the job done, and there can be infections, and there could be all these different problems that arise because it's not, you know, legal and it's not regulated. So they get the abortions either way, but if you outlaw it in the country, well, then they just get it and it's dangerous and it's underground and you actually threaten the lives and kill many more women than if it were legal in the country. So that's an absolutely stunning fact. And then also, they're saying that abortions have dropped to the lowest level in the industrialized world. Well, why is that? The answer is very simple. Contraception. So you have, you know, the availability of sex education, of free clinics, stuff like Planned Parenthood. You have widespread availability of condoms. You have the pill. You have all these different things. And when you put all that together and you make people more knowledgeable within the society, well, then they use birth control more, and then the abortion rate drops dramatically. So that's always been my biggest beef with the pro-life people, is that they don't understand that even if you buy their position and you say, okay, that's a good goal to try to limit the number of abortions, well, the way you achieve that is through liberal policies. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say, hey, I'm against abortion, but also, by the way, I'm against the condom, I'm against the pill, I'm against contraception, I'm against health education and sex education. That doesn't make sense. because in order to get the abortions down, you need to up the other things. So there's just this massive contradiction in their brains where they want to have their cake and eat it too. They just want to, like, I don't know, deny human nature as their policy. Let's not have condoms. Let's not have the pill. Let's not have sex ed. And, oh, yeah, by the way, let's ban abortion. But there are going to be more abortions if you don't do those other things. So they can't get it through their thick skulls. And this is where we're at right now. So here are the facts. Now we know. In the developing world, abortions are at an all-time low. Excuse me, not the developing world. The developed world, so the industrialized world, abortions are at an all-time low for those reasons. In the developing world, it's the same because they have less access to those things. And we know that in countries where it's legal versus where it's illegal, the same number of people overall end up getting abortions. It's just one is safe and one is not safe. We know the answer, guys. The answer is doing more progressive policies, not less. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Washington Post had a really creepy story at the end of last week about Donald Trump. I can't wait to share this story with you. It really, I don't know why, but this story got to me almost more than any other Donald Trump story we've ever done, with the exception of, you know, the Geneva Conventions is the problem and those kinds of stories. But this one is unbelievable. And then later on, a stunning admission from Mike Bloomberg about the state of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Thank you. All right, we're back, guys. Okay, let's go to the creepiest story we've done in a long time here. I mean, you should expect anything nowadays from Donald Trump, but this is just, I don't know, there's a lot to read into this from a psychological perspective. The old psychologist in me is coming out. I never was a psychologist, but I there was a time when I was in college and that was gonna, you know, the major. So, all right, here we go. The Washington Post had a really creepy story at the end of last week about how Donald Trump used to call various newspapers and tabloids, and he would pretend to be a spokesman or a PR person, call so that he can brag about himself. That's so weird. So, we'll discuss in a second, but we have a little clip here from the Today Show where they bring it up to him and we get his response.
Not sure if you have been made aware of this Washington Post report that's out this morning, but they have obtained a recording with a voice of someone that they say is in fact you, someone who's pretending to be a PR person. This is from 25 years ago, and let me play a portion of the tape for it for you. Tape. The person on it talks about his dating exploits, goes on about his divorce, things like that. I guess the simple question this morning, are you aware of the tape? Is it you?
No, I don't think it. I don't know anything about it. You're telling me about it for the first time, and it doesn't sound like my voice at all. I have many, many people that are trying to imitate my voice, and you can imagine that. And this sounds like one of the scams, one of the many scams. It doesn't sound like me.
The Post says that you acknowledged a couple decades ago that, in fact, that was you, but it was a joke.
I don't think it was me. It doesn't sound like me. I don't know even what they're talking about. I have no idea.
The Post also says this is something you did rather routinely, that you would call reporters and plant stories and say either you were John Miller or John Barron, but in fact it was actually you on the phone. Is that something you did with any regularity?
No, and it was not me on the phone. It was not me on the phone. And it doesn't sound like me on the phone, I will tell you that. And it was not me on the phone. And when was this, 25 years ago?
In the early 90s, but,
wow,
yeah.
You mean you're going so low as to talk about something that took place 25 years ago about whether or not I made a phone call? I guess you're saying under a presumed name.
All right. From a psychological perspective, this is a really weird story because – who does that? Again, what he would do is he would say he's either John Miller or John Barron. He would call various newspapers and tabloids, and he would do basically marketing and PR for himself. And he would basically brag about how awesome Trump is while pretending to be somebody who is not Trump, pretending to be a spokesperson. And I listened to the whole tape. They have the whole phone call up in the article in the Washington Post. I recommend you go listen to it. And first of all, there's just no doubt about it. It is 100% Trump. To even entertain the idea that it's not Trump is honestly retarded. Like, you would have to be a ridiculous human being to say that's not him. But in the tapes, they're like, the whole point of it is for him to say how great Trump is, and he tells this story about how, yeah, I was at a party and Madonna came up to me. He like brags that all these actresses and singers and famous people, they all want to date Trump. They all think he's great. And there's a story about, oh, Madonna wanting to date him, but oh, he didn't really want to, and her boyfriend was there anyway. And there's another story about, oh, Kim Basinger wanted to date him. And there's a certain part in the recording where he says I at one point. Like, he keeps trying to talk like, oh, he, because he's pretending not to be Trump. So he keeps saying he this, he that, he. And then there was one time where he's like, you know, I never saw. And then he immediately snaps back and goes into saying he again. Dude, I don't think people are getting is that Donald Trump is obviously a shameless liar, but like his whole career has been about just narcissism, and he's this empty shell of a human being, and he's trying to fill this void within him by getting attention and love and adoration from other people, and in this case, the public. So he's trying to get his name in the papers and trying to get people to care about him and what he's doing. But the entire fucking time, he's a phony. He's a fraud. Even the idea, as we speak about all the time, oh, he's such a great businessman. No, his daddy left him with a tremendous amount of money. He says, oh, just a small $1 million loan. Not true. When his dad died, he got way more than $1 million. He started with a fucking silver spoon in his mouth, and his companies went bankrupt 5 times. And now he says, I'm a great businessman. Everybody thinks he's a great businessman. Based on what? Even, did you know, again, we spoke about this, we've covered stories on it. He says, depending on what day it is, he'll claim he's $9 billion, $10 billion. People say max is like $4.5 billion, but even that's a lot, right? But he still lies. He inflates it for no goddamn reason. But it's also possible he's worth as little as $150 million. Now, again, that's a ridiculous amount of money, but the point is, Donald Trump being Donald Trump, he can't help himself. Everything is a lie. Everything exaggerates. Everything is boasting about how great he is. And it's like the old saying from the song goes, real gangsta-ass niggas don't flex nuts because real gangsta-ass niggas know they got them. So Donald Trump, indeed, is not a real gangsta-ass nigga. That's for sure. And I don't know what it is, but going through this story, like something clicked about Trump that I was just like, oh. Now, normally you guys know me, man. All I care about is the policy substance, and all I care about, that's why we always talk about his comments about how the Geneva Convention is the problem, and I'm going to bring back waterboarding. I'm going to bring back worse than waterboarding. I'm going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. I'm going to kill the families of ISIS in the Middle East. Not ISIS, the families, the civilians, go after their families. So I care overwhelmingly about policy. I'm rarely, if ever, one of those people who makes the goofy argument that's goofy 95% of the time. The character, this person's character is questionable. No, with Donald Trump, his character is literally the most questionable I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, he really strikes me as this fraud, this phony of a human being, this shell of a human being, who embodies every negative stereotype about Americans. He's a fame whore. He's power hungry. He's narcissistic. And it's all based on nothing. And he lies even when there's really no gain to it. Because as they mentioned in that clip there, he admitted, and they mentioned this in the Washington Post article, he admitted in a 1990 court case over some other thing that, yeah, that was me. I used to call all the tabloids and newspapers saying I'm this person, but, I'm not, I'm me, but I was pretending to be John Miller or John Barron, and I would do that. And then he said it was a, quote, joke gone awry. Okay, it wasn't a joke. He called everybody and did it, and just to boast and pump up his own ego. But he admitted it, and now all of a sudden, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. This? Me? That sounds nothing like me. I don't know what you're talking about. Who's, like, we all have ears, Don. We know it sounds exactly like you because it is you. I don't know what you're talking about. Me? I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. There's something really off-putting about a guy who can lie in that plain a fashion. Like, it's nothing. He lies like he's eating a bowl of cereal in the morning for breakfast. It's nothing to him. Like, no, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. I never did that. You admitted in the 1990 court case you did. I don't know what you're talking about. He's a con man. I mean, that's all there is to it. So, and believe me, in no way, shape, or form am I doing this story in order to say, so therefore Hillary Clinton is wonderful. No. Fuck Hillary, too. She's also a liar, okay? And we'll go after her. We'll keep tearing her down because we care about facts first. But what I am saying is, if you've bought into the obvious fraud that is Donald Trump, you're a silly person. Okay. I don't know, man. That story over the weekend, I was flabbergasted by that story. Like, who the fuck does that? Who does that? Okay, I got more for you. Now we move on to Mike Bloomberg. Time magazine has an article about Mike Bloomberg, and he admits something that's long been kept under wraps in Washington. So Bloomberg said at a hedge fund conference, how sad is it that those exist? Oh, to be a fly on the wall in one of those meetings. He said this, quote, "The Republican Party is no longer the party of business. The rise of Donald Trump, whose strongly protectionist stances on trade are far off from the positions taken by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and major corporations, has largely bucked the Republican business community. The GOP has instead sought to appeal to union members and white middle-class workers," Bloomberg said. Bloomberg went on to say that Republicans believe that corporate leaders will always back a GOP candidate, and they have not taken pains to court the business community as they have in the past. But the well may run dry for Republican candidates. Quote, "The Republican calculus is that they will hate Hillary so much that they'll give to us. Why on earth would you give money unless you thought you could influence the policy?" Oh, what an unbelievably telling comment this is. So there's so many things to say about it. First, let's talk about the Republicans and that it's somewhat true what he's saying. And this is something actually Noam Chomsky had brought up probably 2 years ago, where he said, overall in the U.S., you don't have two separate parties. You have two different factions of the business party. But what's happening now with the Republicans is that they're having a hard time controlling their rabid base, who they only really got into the political scene to be their little drones and their little puppets and to vote for them and shut the fuck up. So in other words, that's why you always had Republicans who would appeal to Christian values and overtly to religion and talk about certain things from a social issues perspective, just to get, you know, as Chomsky would call them, the nativists and the nationalists and the evangelicals and to vote for them. But once they voted for them, they, you know, they wouldn't really, at least at the federal level, they wouldn't do dick on those issues which those people cared so much about, like abortion and things of that nature. So it got to the point where, you know, now they're having a hard time controlling that rabid base, and now that rabid base has totally taken over the party in the sense that the Republicans who would just speak in that coded racist language to get votes, now you have somebody in Donald Trump who drops the coded angle of it, and he's just flat-out racist and xenophobic and bigoted, and they love him for that. So you have this party that has gone fucking nuts. That seems to be more of what they represent now. And that was just a front for selling out totally to corporate America. Now, Donald Trump represents, he comes in and he starts using populist rhetoric, and that populist rhetoric of actually pretending to care about the you know, economic well-being of the American people, the corporations are like, fuck that. You know, we need you to be for us, and oftentimes what we want is at the expense of the American people, so you've got to be on our team, and they're not sure Donald Trump is. Now, at the end of the day, I think he probably is. I think he probably is going to play ball and be part of the establishment, but he certainly portrays himself as anti-establishment, and that scares them. So they've gone so far right that now the business people and the corporations are like, ooh, you guys are kind of fucking crazy. Now, again, they used to be just 100% total sellouts, and you didn't think they were real Kool-Aid drinkers, and they really liked Rush Limbaugh, and they really believed in Pat Robertson's evangelical Christianity. But now let's pivot to the Democrats. The Democrats, and this is the thing about Bloomberg that drives me crazy. Bloomberg portrays it like it's a good thing. Like, well, I mean, now there's an argument to be made that the Democrats are bigger sellouts to corporations than to Wall Street. So therefore, the business community should line up behind Hillary Clinton because she's on your side. She's with multinational corporations and Wall Street hedge funds. Yay! Except, okay, that's true that she's a total sellout. But why would you think that's a good thing? Well, in his case, I get it. He's a billionaire and he's a douchebag. So he's like, oh, well, this is the way it should be. You should represent just business and not the American people because we're the responsible people who fuck over everybody else, and that's good because that's we're in the elite club. No, but see, that's not a good thing. I mean, it used to be the case way back in the day. FDR's Democratic Party was a Democratic Party that said, I welcome their hatred, talking about Wall Street, talking about the big business community. Now it's Hillary Clinton and her party is, I took $675,000 from Goldman Sachs to give two speeches because that's what they offered. Oh, how far we've come. But in Michael Bloomberg's mind, he's like, well, obviously that means the Democrats are preferable now. And you don't think the people in the hedge funds and the people in Wall Street are onto this? Now, don't get me wrong. They would never, ever, ever donate to a guy like Bernie Sanders because they know that he would raise their taxes. He would re-regulate Wall Street. He would, yes, redistribute to make our, you know, the income gap significantly better. They would never give to a guy like him. But to Hillary Clinton, to somebody like Evan Bayh, for example, to who's no longer there, but he already officially cashed in and sold out. But to any of these corporatist Democrats, Chuck Schumer, oh, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, oh, now they know. It used to be the safest bet in the world to give money to Republicans, and the whole party is just a front for corporate America. But now they're afraid they actually believe the racist, xenophobic, bigoted shit, and they're perhaps uncontrollable. So now Wall Street and the hedge funds, they think the safest bet in the world is the establishment wing of the Democratic Party, the center-right wing of the Democratic Party, which, by the way, is probably most of the party at this point. The only other people, the Progressive Caucus, people like Keith Ellison, Bernie Sanders, they're the only people who are not in that wing. But that's who Wall Street likes now. Wall Street's favorite is somebody like Hillary Clinton. So this Democratic Party should honestly be ashamed of itself, because this used to I think Hillary's people just cut the line. Random disconnection there. Curious timing, though. Curious timing. All right, anyway, I don't know where I lost you guys, so I'm just going to go right to the beginning of the Raw story piece again here so you see where we're at. So anyway, here we go. Raw story explains, Nevada's Democratic State Committee defended excluding 58 Bernie Sanders delegates at their convention Saturday night, saying they failed to register properly before the final caucus. According to the Las Vegas Sun, Clinton took 20 of the 35 pledged delegates Nevada will send to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia this summer. Sanders supporters, who were slightly outnumbered by fans of Clinton, shouted down speakers with California Senator Barbara Boxer called a bitch as she tried to speak. Supporters of the Vermont senator complained bitterly as Democratic leaders quickly attempted to gavel the proceedings to a close. The Nevada State Democratic Party defended excluding 58 Sanders delegates. According to the party, quote, and actually let me pause on their quote for a second here to just bring up. In the article, they're framing it like, you know, the anger of the Bernie Sanders supporters came out of nowhere. That's not true. That's nowhere near true. They were mad because the 58 people, and at the time 64 people, were just excluded from the process. The Bernie Sanders delegates, they're there for that purpose, and they literally shut the doors on them. So the Bernie supporters inside the room are like, what the fuck are you doing? That's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then Barbara Boxer, by the way, she does a rule change, a temporary rule change while she's up there, and she has to do a yay or nay in the room in order to do it. She goes, those say yay, say it now. And then those say nay, say it. In no way did the rules pass or get adopted. And she was like, the new rules have been adopted. And then she gavels and runs out. What the fuck are we doing here? So let's go directly to the party themselves and see what they have to say about how they just shut out a gigantic number of Bernie delegates from the process because they felt like it. They say, there were 64 Sanders delegates and alternates whose validity was challenged because of the following issues. They were not registered Democratic voters in Nevada by May 1st, 2016. Their information, such as address, date of birth, and name, could not be found, and they did not respond to requests from the party and campaigns to correct it. They continue here. Of the 64 delegates and alternates, 6 were allowed to be seated after their appropriate information was provided, and 58 were denied because of the reasons outlined above. The party also called any insinuation of unfairness totally inaccurate, saying that they were abiding by rules unanimously set forth by the Credentials Committee. Okay, so you hear that, and some people might go, well, okay, wait a second, that seems semi-legit. They're talking about registration issues, and they're talking about, you know, attempts to correct something. They didn't respond to the attempts to correct it. What are you going to do? I mean, it is what it is. Got paperwork issues happen, and they happen for Bernie supporters, they happen for Hillary supporters, and they happen all over the place. So how many Hillary supporters were not allowed in for the same reason? So paperwork issues, attempts to correct something, not getting it right, not registering in the proper way. How many? Zero. Donut. It was a total coincidence. It was a coincidence that all of the so-called registration issues happened to be with Bernie delegates, 58 of them, 64 at the time, it became 58. 58 of them, and on Hillary's side, would you look at that? Everybody just happened to have the perfect paperwork. They registered exactly on time, and there's no fishiness here whatsoever. My ass cheeks. And by the way, let's assume for a second, so let's buy their bullshit excuse. Is that a sufficient reason to say, actually, no, now we're going to award way more delegates to Hillary, even though this guy is more organized, has more delegates, and I'm sure these people actually did register. But would that be a legitimate excuse, even if they were right? No! Could you imagine in any other context that being the case? Like, what do you mean? We had an election here, and this one with, let's say, 60%, but We're just going to say they got 49%. Why? Well, they 11% of their supporters didn't register properly and didn't fill the paperwork out. That's cause for a fucking revolt. That's cause for people to lose their shit, because then what's the point of having the process anyway? Now, again, don't get me wrong, guys. So I would get rid of the system entirely, because I don't like the caucus system. I don't like the following conventions. I don't like the way it's unfolded so far. I really don't think it is very democratic. I would do a straight, a popular vote and allow independents into the process, and one person, one vote is my ideal. But we have this system now, and since Bernie Sanders supporters are overwhelmingly more organized, as we've seen, as evidenced by every other state and what they've accomplished, the Hillary supporters are going, well, there's really only one way that we can take this from him and continue to have this gigantic lead. It's to rig the process and to just kind of overtly shut down his delegates and come up with bullshit excuses like, I don't know, paperwork, registration, something, whatever. We have no interest in allowing these delegates into the room. And the final point I want to make on this is, why would you even do this? You don't even have to do this. I mean, guys, if you look at the vote count right now, again, putting aside everything that we all know, that, hey, independents were shut out in so many states and there were, you know, voting issues and they cut polling places and all that hurts Bernie and helps Hillary. Putting aside all that stuff, Hillary today has over a 2 million vote popular vote lead. She has over a 200 pledged delegate lead, not even superdelegates, pledged delegates. You don't even need to do this, but they do it anyway, because absolute power corrupts absolutely. She can't help herself. She can't help herself. They can't help themselves. Not just Hillary, but her supporters, her surrogates, and apparently the state Democratic Party in Nevada. And what I think happened here is they saw that the first Nevada convention, Bernie Sanders supporters were incredibly organized, and Bernie ended up picking up delegates at that convention because his supporters are so much more passionate and so much more organized, and they're going to get the job done. Opposite argument now. They take the truth and they flip it on its head. It's an old Republican trick. You attack the strength of the opponent, where they say, oh, we were going to allow the 58 Bernie Sanders delegates to come in the room, but we shut the door in their faces. Why? Because they're so disorganized that they couldn't even get their fucking paperwork and their registration right. I don't believe that for a second. Doing a little bit of paperwork, if you're a Bernie Sanders delegate or you're a Bernie supporter, to try to get Bernie Sanders elected, they would do paperwork from now until the end of time to try to get that dude elected over Hillary Clinton. So ironically, they take the area where he's the best and his supporters are the best, how organized they are, how good they are with boots on the ground, and how much they will take care of the minor details, dot the I's and cross the T's. They take that and they say, well, that's where you're failing. You didn't register properly. What are you talking about? Oh, you didn't put your middle initial on the fucking form. What am I going to do? How do I know it's you? It's probably not you. Shut the door in your face. What? Hillary wins! Hillary wins! Everybody run out the back door. And you think this is going to help you get Bernie Sanders supporters in the general? Hillary is poised to lose this election. I'm telling you. The amount of disdain and arrogance that her and her camp has for Bernie Sanders voters, it's off the fucking charts. And meanwhile, as she's snubbing them repeatedly and doing dirty tricks like this, she's courting Bush donors. She literally called Wall Street Bush donors and said, I represent your values better than Donald Trump does. Keep running to the right, Hillary. You already started out too far right. Now you're running further to the right, further alienating your base and independents, and you think you got this election locked up. That is hilarious. Okay. All right, I got to take a quick break here, but we'll be back. It'll be a super quick break because I got so much other stuff to get to. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Jump right into it, because I got a lot to get to. Okay. The New York Times shared an unbelievable fact over the weekend about the negative side of Obama's legacy. Listen to this. They say, Obama came into office 7 years ago, pledging to end the wars of his predecessor, George W. Bush. On May 6th, with 8 months left before he vacates the White House, Mr. Obama passed a somber, little-noticed milestone. He has now been at war longer than Mr. Bush or any other American president. If the United States remains in combat in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria until the end of Mr. Obama's term, a near certainty given the president's recent announcement that he will send 250 additional special operations forces to Syria, he will leave behind an improbable legacy as the only president in American history to serve two complete terms with the nation at war. Wow. Change we can believe in. Indeed, it was change. It was change in the worst direction. Where he said, I'm going to end the wars, he started more and he kept us involved in the other ones, and it's going to be his entire time in office. Incredible. See, your choices today among the two parties, you either go with the party that's for imperialism, hard imperialism, where it's ground invasions oftentimes in a variety of different countries that did not attack us, or you go, that's the Republicans, or you go with the Democrats and it's soft imperialism. So what does that mean? Well, you sprinkle some special ops forces here and there, have some advisors on the ground, do airstrike campaigns all over the fucking place, and most importantly, drones. Drones all day long, do it everywhere. Obama has intervened in, I think it's 7 different countries. Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya. 7. The supposedly liberal Democratic president has intervened in 7 different countries. Many of them we're still intervening in right now. And, you know, it's an all-you-can-eat buffet of different ways we attack in different places. And, you know, for people, I always find it funny, the people who make the argument of the necessity of drones, it's either this, it's either a hard ground invasion or it's drones. Well, wait a second. If you think you're super morally superior and liberal and you're going, well, drones it is, well, how do you respond to the internal memo that in the government that we learned from the drone papers where they said, 90% of the time, they're killing the wrong people. 90% of the time. That is indefensible. You have former drone operators who come out and say, yeah, we're killing civilians all over the place. It's horrific. They call little kids, they've blown up little kids and called them fun-sized terrorists. I mean, look, this is happening under President Obama. He deserves the blame for this. And this is the saddest part of it all, is that the system is so geared towards war And, you know, with the military-industrial complex and coasting off the momentum of previous administrations, we're at the point now where it really is, you go with the Republicans and they do hard imperialism, neoconservative style, or you go with the Democrats and they do soft imperialism, drones everywhere, bombs everywhere. And oftentimes, guys, let's face it, this ends up creating more terrorists. It does. Now, I've said from the beginning, probably the best way to take on ISIS and take on jihadists is you can give aid to the Kurds, for example. The Kurds have been, you know, the main force fighting against. Honestly, in many circumstances, you could support the Shia militias. But this is a battle and this is a fight that has to be fought by the people in the region. For us to go there, all we do is unite the opposition. And we've spoken about this before. Zawahiri, or was it Zarqawi or Zawahiri? Either one. I forget. The head of Al-Qaeda today, guy with the Z in his name. That guy was like, oh, well, wait a second. What will unite all the different rival jihadist factions, the splinter groups that broke up, what will bring us all together is coming together to fight the evil crusader Americans. So ISIS and Al-Qaeda fucking hate each other, and they promise to fight each other unless the U.S. is there, and then they'll come together and fight the U.S. So they're letting you know this is a problem that will solve itself. You get out, and then we turn on each other, and we kill each other. There's nothing I want more than ISIS and Al-Qaeda to kill each other. You can all fucking die. Wonderful. So why would we be insistent upon making the problem worse? And never mind the fact, I haven't even brought up the fact that we have idiots in the government like General Petraeus, who says, oh, by the way, we should arm Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda is going to fight ISIS. Therefore, arm them, and it's not going to come back and hurt us, is it? It's not like Al-Qaeda's ever done a gigantic terrorist attack in the U.S., right? And then again, there's another angle to this, which is we have Pentagon-backed CIA rebels Pentagon-backed rebels fighting CIA-backed rebels. Different parts of the U.S. government are funding different sides in the same fucking conflict. This is Obama's legacy. Sure, look, I'm more than happy to give him credit when he deserves credit. I love what he did with Cuba. I love what he did with the executive orders on immigration, which are currently going through the court system. I love what he did with Iran. You know, for all the bad-mouthing I do of Obamacare, it's certainly better than the system we had before. I want Medicare for all, but it's a step in the right direction. I'm more than willing to give Obama credit when he deserves credit. He does not deserve credit here. This is shameful. A supposedly liberal Democratic president been at war his entire time in office when he promised to get us out of there. He did not get us out of there. And again, the problem has gotten worse. You cannot make the argument that, well, what we did is the right thing and it worked out. Except, wait a second, there are more jihadists and terrorists today than there were before we did all the countless interventions. So you are simply wrong if you believe that's the answer. It is not the answer. But like I said at the beginning, you either go hard imperialism, ground invasions, the neocon way, the Republican way, or you go soft imperialism, the Democratic way. Airstrikes, drone strikes, some special ops people on the ground and advisors on the ground, and both ways they end up making the problem worse. But that won't stop them from continuing to go down the wrong path. Okay. Now let's go to Bill O'Reilly. I'm going to have some fun with this story. Bill O'Reilly is not a fan of the internet. He's going to express that here in typical curmudgeonly grandpa fashion. Let's watch.
You heard about this. Facebook shuts out conservative postings, all right, in favor of liberal postings. And the guy who's in charge of that, Tom Stocky, apparently he and his wife gave $5,400 to Hillary Clinton. There's Tom. And I've been saying this from the jump on Yahoo and these other deliverers. You can't find conservative opinion on them. And everybody goes, oh, you're crazy. It's an aggregate. It's this, it's that. I go, baloney. There's human beings.
No, this is false advertising. They're saying this is a mathematical algorithm.
Yeah, baloney.
It is baloney. And this is what, look, there's some whistleblower saying we stepped on conservative content and propped up liberal content. And now this guy, who's in charge of content, is a Clinton donor. It doesn't look very good for him.
And he looks like he's like 16 years old. Put a picture up there again. I really, when I saw this guy, I thought they were remaking Leave It to Beaver. He was going to play Wally. But these guys, they're in their 20s. They're young people. And they get, nobody's looking at them. There's no editor there.
No.
They can throw up what they want to throw up.
They can. It's a private company. They can do anything they want. But the consumers, to understand that Facebook is not treating conservatives
fairly. I don't think Yahoo is. I don't know about Google. I don't go there very much. But I think that whole Internet is stacked against any kind of traditional conservative thought, less work.
I just think Facebook needs to make sure that the American people, their consumers, liberals, conservatives, independents, understand that they are being treated fairly, and I don't think the evidence proves that right now.
All right, I have so much to say about this. So first of all, there was this scandal the other week about how conservative news is being suppressed on Facebook. Okay, I literally do not know what that means. What does that mean? So, because if you were to say to me, liberal news is being suppressed somewhere, I would say, I don't know what that means. Or my reaction might even be good, because I don't want news with a liberal slant or a conservative slant. I just want news. You know, if you tell me beforehand, like, oh, I'm going to bias it this way or that way, I'm not interested in that. Just give me the facts. Give me the information. That's all I care about. So when they say, oh, the conservative news is being suppressed, if what you mean by that is, hey, websites like WorldNet Daily and the Daily Caller and the Drudge Report are not often prominently featured on Facebook, my response to that is good, because those websites have a track record of being fucking hack websites that simply make shit up. Like WorldNet Daily, for example, they literally ran a story about, they said a demon ran in front of the camera when Obama was getting off a plane when he did a visit to Africa. If that's the kind of conservative news that's being suppressed, suppress that all day long. Why? Not because it's conservative, but because it ain't news. By the same token, if you come to me and you say, hey, I got this article from a conservative news site that says that creationism is true and evolution is bullshit, I'm going to tell you to fuck right off. And you can go whine all day long about, yeah, conservative bias, because you won't run the story about how evolution isn't true. Well, you're a whiny little bitch, and ironically, you're doing PC outrage. Because you're not telling me exactly what I want to hear all the time, therefore, I'm outraged. Well, I thought you guys were against political correctness. Now you're arguing for political correctness. They haven't treated conservatives fairly. What does that mean? What are you saying? Oh, it's bias against conservative news. Well, again, if that means you're taking non-news sites that pretend to be news sites and you say, let's not run those, I say, great, because it ain't news. So I don't know what that means when they say conservative news is suppressed. And by the way, I don't even really believe it. Like, you're telling me, for example, so if there's a story that's true that happens to be a plus for the conservative side, they're not running those stories? My ass. Go back and check what happened with the rollout of Obamacare. Remember when the rollout was botched and it was fucked up? And that made the conservatives look good at that point in time. Okay, those were news stories that were seemingly had a conservative bias that was true. So Facebook didn't have any articles about that. Really? None of those were, you know, prominent at the time, even though it was the number one news story? I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I'm sure they ran that because it's true, okay? And I also do believe that, oh, it's an algorithm and this and that and whatever, you know, gets read the most, that rises to the top. Okay. That's almost certainly the real explanation. And by the way, if that is exactly what happened, well, then you're not suppressing conservative news. It just failed in the marketplace of ideas. How glorious is this? The same fucking thing. I've heard people on the right say this. And by the way, I agree with them when they say it. When they say, oh, what do you mean? There should be a marketplace of ideas, and so you don't censor anything. You let everything free flow. Marketplace of ideas, and the best ones rise to the top. Well, if that's what happens on Facebook, how massively ironic. Because it's like they want affirmative action for conservative so-called news to place it up there with the more popular news that's actually true, that you say is liberal, but we say is just true. So that's the real point here is, all of a sudden, these guys who supposedly believe in the free marketplace of ideas, when they get their ass kicked in that free marketplace of ideas, they're like, no more free marketplace of ideas, please, no more free marketplace. hilarious. No, I've always said from day one, I believe in the free marketplace of ideas. And by the way, that's why conservative thought gets its ass kicked on the internet. O'Reilly's right that on the internet, it's a bastion of liberalism. Why? Because we win in the free marketplace of ideas. It turns out evolution is true. You know, it turns out your religiosity and your bullshit fundamentalism doesn't fly online because we smell the bullshit from a mile away. Now, are there other areas where it's perhaps more nuanced? Sure. Can you have differing opinions on taxes? Sure. But that's on the internet. So, okay, one more thing. I know I'm dragging on here, but did you see who O'Reilly was talking to there? He was talking to a representative of Citizens United. You know what Citizens United is? They're a conservative nonprofit group. They're most famous for the Citizens United Supreme Court case where they were on the side of money equals free speech. You'll forgive me if I don't take seriously the opinions on free speech from somebody from Citizens United. The most preposterous position ever taken in a Supreme Court case in human history. We have a right to buy politicians and to make them our puppets. We have a right to corruption in America. Why? Because free speech. That ain't free speech, bitch. But that's the argument they make. And now somebody from Citizens United comes out and he wants to lecture us all on free speech. Let me tell you something about free speech. So let me tell you something about free speech, dipshit. So you say money equals free speech. Okay, then go come out tomorrow and argue that prostitution should be legal. I'll wait. Why? Money speech. If I'm giving money to a prostitute for a blowjob, I'm just expressing my speech about how much I love blowjobs, and that can't be illegal. That's free speech. So come out and argue for that. Come out and say all drugs need to be legal. Why? Money speech. When I give money to my drug dealer and I take the drugs, well, that's just me expressing how much I love drugs with speech because money is speech. Here, I'm giving you some speech and you can give me back a product. So you want to be consistent? Make that argument. You're not going to make that argument because you're not consistent. You're just pro-corruption. So I don't take your thoughts on free speech seriously because you've proven every step of the way you got no clue what the fuck you're talking about. And it's just a guise to buy politicians and in this case, ironically, suppress liberal thought while unfairly propping up your conservative thought by giving it affirmative action on the internet. Okay. All right, let me try to squeeze in one or two more here. A man who kept his daughter as a sex slave for 23 years has been released from prison, quote, despite fears that he may reoffend. All right, this is a story that will make you want to put your head through a brick wall. According to The Independent, Ronald Vanderplot was sentenced to 15 years in prison in 2001 for repeatedly hanging his daughter up by her ankles and placing her head in a box with a padlock on it as he raped her. He was originally released in 2010, but was ordered back to jail in 2012 after being seen holding hands with a young girl at a museum. Wow. The 82-year-old began abusing his daughter from when she was just 9 years old until she was 32. He impregnated her at age 12. Oh, my God. And there was a miscarriage. And now he's moving back to his house, which is just 400 meters away from a school. Okay. Out comes Kyle's conservative side. This guy should be locked up forever. He should die in jail. That's what should happen. In fact, I can't fathom that he was ever let go. I mean, listen to this. He raped his fucking kid repeatedly, kept her as a sex slave for 23 years, was released in 2010, God knows why then, and then he was immediately caught holding hands with a little girl. And they're like, okay, now we got to put you back in jail. And then they release him again today. All right, look, man. We've said it before, but some crimes deserve rehabilitation and rehabilitation only. Some crimes. Some crimes deserve a mix of rehabilitation and punishment. Some crimes deserve, in my opinion, nothing but punishment. When somebody is so far beyond help and so far beyond rehab and they show no remorse, and there's signs they'll do it again, yada, yada, yada. In that case, just punishment. Now, I don't mean that in the fucking, you know, right-wing bullshit way, where they literally want to torture people and become the demon they're trying to avoid themselves. No, I'm talking about punishment in the way that makes sense. So, okay, you're going to jail for life. That's it. That's it. Okay, we're going to put you in jail for life. You need to be kept away from society because you are a danger to society, as you've repeatedly proved. In this case, that's what I see. So as much as I think, you know, New Zealand is probably a place where they get things right on other political issues way more than we do, on this one, my Americanism comes out, and I think, keep this guy locked up forever. Now, by the way, that's not to say the U.S. is right totally on criminal justice. Overall, we're way too right-wing, and we're way too punitive, and as a result of that, our recidivism rate is much higher than in other nations. But this is one case here where I wouldn't take a risk. I'd keep this guy locked up forever, and I think people who don't agree with that, you've significantly outlived me. That's for sure. Okay, and finally... RT is describing a new way in which women in Saudi Arabia are being disrespected and massively oppressed. They report women in Saudi could be sent to jail and flogged if they check their husband's phone without his knowledge and consent. The matter is not covered in the kingdom's Islamic laws, but would instead be seen as a violation of privacy. So a lawyer goes on to explain here, quote, "This subject involves the husband and the wife, and it is a tazir offense, so it is possible that there would be a flogging, a fine, imprisonment, just signing a pledge, or even nothing. So basically, it's up to the discretion of the judge, but it's certainly possible that a woman in Saudi Arabia who looks at her husband's phone without his permission, without his knowledge, she could get flogged and spend time in jail." Okay, so what we're talking about here is a situation where they're just viewing women as property, okay? There's no rights, there's obviously no equality, there's no justice. It's just, you are this thing that is my plaything that pops out babies that I want. So, you know, you are my property, I'm going to keep you locked up, and then I come home, if I'm nice, maybe I take you for a walk. By the way, they need chaperones in public. Can't drive, you know, we've gone through the list of horrific things. The fact that this exists in 2016 is inexcusable, and there's many angles to the problem. In some respects, now not specifically in this case, but in many respects, it is tied to religious fundamentalism, and specifically to Sharia. In this case, we're talking about more of a cultural issue and just an ultra-conservative, misogynistic culture that views women as property. Because like I said, this isn't from the kingdom's Islamic laws, but would be seen as a violation of privacy. So in other words, the man is the ruler, the woman is the piece of property, and okay, I have all the rights in the world, you have none. And then by the way, how quickly the men in Saudi would scream oppression if a woman does anything against them anyway. Meanwhile, women have no rights, but if you so much as look at my phone, oh, my rights have been violated. Like, profound idiocy isn't a strong enough term to describe the backwards mindset of these cretinous men who've kept women down all this time in Saudi Arabia. So it's a sad thing, and look, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm in favor of the United States government, for example, putting pressure on Israel to try to get a two-state deal and create a Palestine. I'm also in favor of the U.S. government in a variety of different ways, putting pressure on Saudi Arabia and other places where human rights are viciously repressed for women, for minorities, across the spectrum here. So, yeah, we should put pressure on them. Not a war, nothing like that, but just to let them know, hey, this isn't how you act in 2016, and certainly – you don't put them on the fucking human rights panel to lead it at the UN, which is something that happens with Saudi Arabia. How crazy is that? We live in fucking backwards land. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Don't miss me too much. Mwah. Much love, everybody. Peace.